Today, for our Friday Forum webinar, we welcome UVA alumna Leslie Field, who graduated from the Comm School in 1990. Leslie is the Deputy Administrator for Federal Procurement Policy in the Office of Management and Budget, Executive Office of the President, and has served as the Acting Administrator periodically since September of 2008. Ms. Field is a Fellow of the National Academy of Public Administration and a winner of the Fed 100 Award. Prior to joining OMB, Leslie served at the U.S. Department of Transportation as a contracting officer and procurement policy analyst in the Office of the Secretary. She received her Bachelor of Science in Commerce from the University of Virginia, her Master's degree in Public Administration from Virginia Tech, and she completed the Senior Executive Fellows Program at the John F. Kennedy School of Government at Harvard University. Ms. Field led the government's acquisition workforce professionalization efforts to develop the core standards for qualifications, training, and development that are now used by all civilian agency contracting officers, program managers, and contracting officers' representatives. She also led the development of the government's first generation of strategic sourcing policies and practices and continues to lead multiple efforts to further leverage the government's buying power and reduce duplication through OMB's Category Management Leadership Council. Please help me welcome Leslie Field with Spotlight on Government Careers, Federal Contracting Officers, Opportunities for Innovative Thinkers.
Great. Well, thank you, Liz, and thanks to everyone for joining me for my first ever webinar. As Liz mentioned, I've been in federal contracting since I graduated from UVA, which, while it seems like just yesterday, was a surprisingly long time ago. But I've really enjoyed this career field, and I am very appreciative for having UVA let me come and talk to you about the careers in federal contracting. So from my comm school experience, I certainly understood mergers and acquisitions, but it wasn't until I got into contracting that I really understood what the federal acquisition process really looked like. And so we'll go through some examples today about what is purchased on federal contracts and kind of how those career fields work. But it was a perfect blend of what I learned at McIntyre, my business analytics, my negotiation skills, my management skills, and sort of my penchant for public service and wanting to make a difference. So it's been a terrific career field, and I'm very excited to share it with you today. But I think we should first start with why federal service? Why would you want to work for the federal government? And so I'm just going to do a quick poll. How many folks out there have either been with the federal government or are currently with the federal government? So we'll see if this technology works. If you could just raise your hand, and we can come back to it. That's great. Thank you. So there are thousands of missions under the federal roof. There are over 120 agencies managing lots and lots of different missions, ranging from research of healthcare, implementation of certain programs, sending NASA has lots of missions, and defense, of course, has similar missions about defending our nation, providing aid to certain countries, advancing our scientific capabilities. So there's something for everybody here. 120 agencies are certainly something that resonates, I think, with most people. It's meaningful work. I've got over 2 million colleagues who are involved in all kinds of things from, again, research at NIH, but also doing consumer product testing at the Consumer Product Safety Commission. Meaningful work that impacts a nation, that impacts the people, and so you can really make a difference even in a short amount of time in a career in federal service. We also have a global reach. Federal jobs are everywhere. Every state, every territory, over 150 different countries have federal presences. In fact, over 80% of the work is actually done outside of the DC area, which was news to me, but I think that's great. So you can go almost anywhere, you can do almost anything, and you can keep your great pay and your benefits, which we'll talk about in just a second. So it looks like we do have a couple of folks who are currently or have been in federal service, so that's fantastic. Hopefully by the end of this, we'll have even more that are interested in it. So let's talk a little bit about the benefits. Of course, there are tangible benefits. The federal government offers very flexible work schedules. There's flex time. There's different kinds of part-time schedules that are available. There's generous sick and annual leave, and that you can take that with you when you switch agencies, which is terrific. That's competitive pay. It goes up very quickly when you start, and it's very competitive, I think, at the senior level. So, and of course, great retirement benefits, including matching and pensions. So there are lots of tangible reasons for joining the federal service, but I think also the intangible benefits are even greater, honestly. You can have a broad impact. You're given a lot of responsibility, I think, even at the early stages of a career. And again, it does impact the nation and the international community. So you really can have a broad impact on the world. I think that leads to great personal fulfillment. So, for example, when I first started in government, when I first started at OMB, I was very involved in implementing what's called Section 508, which is ensuring that people with disabilities have access to government IT and the data and the information that it produces. And so we spent lots of time implementing that law, and I think for me that was just a great example of how somebody even in the acquisition workforce can better the lives of people everywhere. And it's also, we've got valuable experience that employers like to see on a resume. So for folks who come into the government for a short period of time, the experience that you gain is valuable to employers on the outside, but we're hoping, of course, that you'll stay. But why I'm really here is to talk about careers in federal contracting. And so we'll talk a little bit about what that really means. So in the pursuit of an agency mission, agencies will buy goods and services that they need for their employees and for the work that they're doing. And they usually do that most often on a federal contract. But federal contracts are a little bit different from commercial contracts. There are more requirements. There are sort of unique requirements that the government has in place. And so learning those statutes and learning how to navigate that process is something that I think certainly does take a career, but it makes it very interesting for an interesting job. So contracting officers, and I was one when I was at the Department of Transportation, are the government's agents. And so they are the only people who could enter into a contract and to obligate federal dollars. And so the CO takes that responsibility very seriously. They help to develop the business strategy with their colleagues. They learn to assess the amount of risk that the government is willing to take on. And then they negotiate, of course, in the best interest of the government and the taxpayer. So just to give you a sense of the scope of federal acquisition, in 2014, we spent over $450 billion, so almost half a trillion dollars on goods and services for the government. That was through almost 16 million contract transactions. We've got 3,200 different contracting offices all over the world, all over this country, buying goods and services. And so it's a broad network. We buy far more services than we do goods, and we usually use fixed price contracts versus cost type contracts. Again, fixed price contracts lets the contractor assume more risk than the government, and we'll talk about that in just a little bit. If you're really interested in finding out more about what we spend, where we're spending it, with whom, and on what, you can go to usaspending.gov, and that's a website where you can look at all the agency spending, and you can do some research and analytics there. So let me give you some concrete examples. I know when I started at DOT, I wasn't entirely sure what contracts were for and what we did with them, but I quickly learned that they're everywhere. So if you fly out of an airport, the air traffic control system that keeps you safe was purchased on a contract, very important. If you or somebody you know has received medical care at the VA, the buildings, the equipment, and in many cases, the nurses and the doctors got there through a federal contract. If you check the weather, or if you use GPS, or for example, if you signed up for the Affordable Care Act, or if you enjoy clean water, contractors were involved in all of the research and all of those technologies and many others that we use every day. So it's kind of complex, and it's vast. I think you can get the sense of that. So we've got about 36,000 contracting officers government-wide to help us navigate all of this. Most of them are at the Department of Defense. The rest of them are at the civilian agencies. And my office manages the training and the qualifications for what the civilian agency contracting officers need. So just to give you a short tutorial on the acquisition process, I thought it would be helpful to go through the three main stages. the first stage is developing the requirements. What is it that we need? What are we doing? What is it we want to buy? So, for example, do we want to buy the engine on the airplane, or do we want to just buy the power that the engine produces? Those are questions that we might ask. Does the industry know enough about what we want to assume most of the risk, or is this something new where we should be assuming more of the risk? So those are the types of questions you might ask in the first phase. And there you might work with scientists or engineers or your IT colleagues to sort of figure out what the technical requirements are. In the second phase, which is source selection and contract award, is this something we would think about, is this something that a small business could do? So what would be our business strategy if that were the case? How should we choose among our vendors? Are we mostly interested in the cost? Or are we mostly interested in the technical abilities? How do we do that trade-off analysis, and what does that look like? In this phase, we'll probably work with cost and price analysts, and we'll work with our general counselors and our lawyers to make sure that we are treating everybody fairly and that we've got the right strategy in place. In the last phase, in the contract management, which is the most important, we look at whether the contractor is meeting our cost schedule and performance goals. So most federal contracts are about 5 years in length, and so we have lots of instances where we need to understand if the contractor is performing. Did the government get what it wanted? Did the government get what it paid for? And so we want to make sure that the contractor is on track. So we'll probably, in this phase, work with the program manager or the contracting officer's technical representative or our finance and budget folks to make sure that the contract is on track and that we are paying for what we asked for. So I'm in the Office of Federal Procurement Policy. I'm the deputy administrator there. My boss is a presidentially nominated, Senate-confirmed person, Ann Rong. She's the administrator, and I'm the deputy, and I've been acting throughout the last seven or eight years, in that role as folks come and go in that leadership position. So it's a great place to be. It's part of the Office of Management and Budget. And if you are familiar with OMB, it's part of the Executive Office of the President, but OMB plays a major role in developing and executing the President's budget, managing agency performance to make sure that the money is being spent properly, also conducting the reviews of legislation and significant regulations, and developing and implementing executive orders. So you can see here where we fit in. Again, there are a number of offices within the Executive Office of the President, but I think OMB is the largest. So my office, again, going back to how broad the scope is for federal acquisition, we need structure and organization. So OFPP plays that role. And so we oversee the development of the federal acquisition regulation. So it's a common system of rules and regulations for all of the agencies. There are agency supplements, but we also get involved in making sure that those are aligned with our policies as well. We establish executive branch procurement policies and management initiatives. So for example, if we wanted agencies to reduce their use of high-risk contracts, or if we wanted them to increase their compliance with a certain policy, we might issue direction to the agencies and then keep track of how well they are doing. So we do a lot of work in the management space in particular. We also provide for the government-wide procurement data systems, going back to usaspending.gov, that pulls from our systems. Those are the records of every contract transaction. And so we manage all of that. There are a number of systems that are interconnected to make sure everything is working properly and that we've got the information from all the vendors. And so we manage that. We also lead the Chief Acquisition Officers Council. So every agency has a CXO suite, so a Chief Operating Officer, Chief Acquisition Officer, Chief Information Technologist. So we want to make sure that the acquisition function is on par with those executive management roles. And so we lead the Chief Acquisition Officers, and we leverage their experience, and they help us think through our policies and help us implement all of our directions. So it's a tremendous function for us there. We also direct the training provided by the Federal Acquisition Institute. We manage mostly the civilian agency training and development. The Defense Acquisition University supports the DoD workforce. And going back to the 36,000 contracting officers, there are lots more program managers, contracting officers, representatives, logistics managers. So the acquisition workforce is quite broad. OFPP takes a role in helping to manage the civilian agency workforce. So let's talk about what we're really focused on. So when you're spending $500 billion through 3,200 different organizations, there's probably a chance for fragmentation and inefficiency. So we are implementing what's called category management to better leverage our spending. So when you're buying that much, we really want to look at how we are buying things in those categories. So IT, for example, IT commodities, human resources. So we want to make sure that we understand exactly what agencies are doing, because we've got a lot of duplication, and sometimes we don't take maximum advantage of our being the biggest buyer in the world. And so we'd like to see more aggregation and less duplication. And so by doing that, by looking at that, we've mapped our common spend. So going back to the $450 billion that we spend, about $275 billion of that is common, something that most agencies buy. So human resources, training, pharmaceuticals for some of the agencies. So there are lots of opportunities to gather, either in a multi-agency way or government-wide, to increase our buying power and reduce our spend, including our administrative costs. We're also interested in finding the best solutions and the talent for managing this. So we are starting to look for folks who are very interested in and good at those particular subjects. So for example, we're looking for an IT category manager to make sure we can think through all of our IT needs and figure out how better to buy it. Human resources, OPM does a lot of work there. So trying to figure out how to best organize the government around those categories of spend. We want to improve our vendor relationships. Obviously, we do a lot of work through contracts. We want to make sure we have the proper balance of contractors and federal employees. We also want to hear back from vendors on how our acquisition process is working. So vendors put a lot of money into their bid and proposal costs, so we want to make sure that we are giving them ample opportunity to respond, that our requirements are clear, and so we have some work underway there to make sure that we are doing that. We also want to reduce the unnecessary burden on our contractors so that we can attract the best and brightest companies to help us solve our biggest challenges. We also want to be more welcoming for the small businesses or the startups that perhaps have never done business with the government and are interested in doing that. So we're looking at ways to become a more attractive business partner. And so along those lines, we've issued policies on when to hire contractors and when to how to manage their work. We've held open dialogues with industry so we can hear from them firsthand what we could do better. And we recently started a post-acquisition survey process so that we can get that empirical information from vendors about how well we're doing at the various agencies and bureaus. Because with 3,200 different contracting shops, it's important to see how we're doing, and the agencies should have that management information. We're also really interested in strengthening our acquisition workforce. It was one of the reasons I came to OMB 15 years ago, and it's something that I have been working on ever since. With four generations at work, we need to continue to look for ways to problem solve, but also to bring in the best and brightest. As you can see, acquisition is very complex. It's a very specialized career field. We are looking at further specializing. When you think about the $50 billion or so that we spend on information technology alone, there is a case to be made for specializing in the IT realm. When you look at what we're spending on services, it might make sense also to specialize in services. So sort of having an acquisition degree undergrad, if you will, and then having a sort of master's or a specialization in a particular area. And again, not so much through schools, but just through the training that we provide. Getting the core certifications down is great for everybody, but looking for specialized training in those areas, I think, is sort of the next wave. There's a focus on continuous learning. So when people come into the contracting career field, they get all the basics. They learn their way around the federal acquisition regulation. They learn their way around their agency's requirements. But we think that every year there are new laws or new changes to the federal acquisition regulation. There are new executive orders that need to be implemented. So that continuous learning is incredibly important. FAI is working on an education alliance so that we can bring in our higher education partners around the area and out in the field so that folks are getting some of this information perhaps in their undergraduate studies or in their graduate studies or in their continuous learning and professional degree programs. And so we think that's a huge area of opportunity, and we're looking forward to further sort of institutionalizing the federal acquisition process through those educational alliances. We also want to use more innovation in buying information technology. There's lots of opportunities here. So I'm going to ask another quick question. How many folks out there are familiar with the term agile acquisition or agile IT acquisition? It's a new way of buying, or it's sort of fairly new to the government way of buying information technology in a more iterative way. So instead of waiting for a whole system to be developed, it's sort of doing it along the way. So I think we've got a couple of folks there, that's great, that have heard about it. Agile acquisition, I think, is going to be a focus for the next couple of years for the government. And so I wanted to give you sort of an example of what agile IT acquisition and sort of agile acquisition generally might look like. So here's a real-life example of how an innovation lab at an agency looked at a contracting problem and approached it differently. So this agency needed a new web content management system, which is sort of the public-facing web face. And in the old way, the government would have requested a ginormous and confusing proposal, and which would have been very expensive for a company to prepare. The company would have given us a huge and expensive proposal. We would have awarded the contract based on the words and the promises in that document. And it probably would have taken about 6 months, and sometimes it takes a lot longer, and sort of questionable input from the end user, which we would think would be included in that, but sometimes that gets lost. In this new approach that this agency used, they just submitted a short statement of objectives to let the contractors know what they were looking for. They only asked for a short concept paper, not a huge proposal. The decision was actually made on a prototype of a real-life challenge, so there was a little bit of homework, and they were graded on that. So it really gave the government team a sense of what that contractor could do. It only took about 8 weeks, which was fantastic. That alone is a success story. And the end user input was provided throughout these agile sprints. And so this was a great example of how a little bit of innovation went a long way. And so we're very anxious to sort of export this practice and get this into the hands of all the contracting officers, all the IT folks, and frankly, anybody else, I think, in a program management capacity that could benefit from doing things a little bit differently. So this is sort of my favorite part of it. So it's not just a business deal. So obviously, there's a lot of technical requirements that go into our acquisition policies. There are a lot of rules and regulations. But we really support critical national policy priorities and objectives. So when you're spending $500 billion, that money can really move the needle and it makes a difference. So our rules reflect longstanding social policies that promote and support a number of programs. So for example, for small business, there's a 23% statutory goal. So 23% of, for the most part, of what we buy should be going to small businesses, and we have met that. For persons with disabilities, we have a preference program for certain goods and services to buy from persons with disabilities. We also have requirements that when we buy information technology, going back to my Section 508 example, when we buy IT, that it comes all prepared for persons with disabilities, for screen readers and those kinds of things. So we write that into all of our requirements, and it just becomes part of how we do business. It's very important. We have preference programs for, say, veteran-owned companies or service-disabled veteran-owned companies, women-owned businesses, so we can promote those business development opportunities. So I think that's a really important part of our job, and it really helps us to promote or to enforce the important social policies that the administration identifies. We also expect our contractors, if they're getting federal dollars, to be model employers. So for example, contractors and in some cases subcontractors need to ensure that they have anti-trafficking measures in place throughout their supply chain, that they conduct fair labor practices, that they are good environmental stewards, and that they practice ethical business practices. And so there are a lot of requirements around this, and that's why contracting officers have to know a lot. But I think it's very important to understand that this is all sort of woven into our acquisition regulations and policies. So let me give you an example of a couple of my UVA colleagues who are currently in the federal acquisition space. Jeff Robinson graduated from the college in 2004, and he's contracting officer for the aircraft carriers for the Naval Sea Systems Commander, NAVSEA. He got started through an internship program similar to the one that I went through at DOD. He works on the design, completion, reconstruction, and overhaul of aircraft carriers, so incredibly important technical and complex work. I met Jeff through his most recent notable opportunity where he served as the contracting officer for the recent interagency acquisition of identity protection services for people who were affected by the OPM data breach. So that was over 21 million people who will be getting identity protection services. And so Jeff and his team worked with OPM, and also Personnel Management, the General Services Administration, to come up with, in a very short period of time, to come up with a solution that would afford the folks who are affected by that identity protection services. So that's just one example of how Jeff was using his great UVA education for career and contracting. Another example is Scott Palmer. Scott and I were at the comm school together. He is currently the Director of Procurement for the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, and he is the former deputy head of the contracting activity for the U.S. Coast Guard. Again, we were both in the Department of Transportation program together, which was a great way to come into the government. Currently, he buys all of the systems to support the end-to-end patents, patents, of course, being very important to our economy. And when he was at the Coast Guard, he worked on the response boats. He worked on the National Security Cutters, which are the big ships, and long-range command and control aircraft. One of his notable opportunities was when he was embedded with the BP Coast Guard team after the Deepwater Horizon oil spill, and he was down there to provide with the teams to provide 24/7 support. And so that was a tremendous opportunity where Scott got to use his good experience and really put it to good use. And I think it was a great experience for him, and it's an important part of what we do. So hopefully you see yourself here, because we certainly need your talent. If you've got good analytical skills, if you've got good communication skills, if you've got good people skills, which is really important, if you like solving problems in a new way and you want to make a difference, contracting is a fantastic combination of all of those things. And so we welcome you to this job field. We've got 36,000 colleagues waiting for some new talent as folks start to retire. We're really interested in bringing in some new people who want to work on some of the most interesting missions, honestly, I think that the government has to offer. And so I want to give you a couple of tips and tricks on how to sort of navigate the complex personnel system. But it may seem a little bit daunting, but it's absolutely doable. So if you think about it, there are really sort of three entry points. One are the entry-level jobs. So these are the ladder positions, sort of the general, it's called GS, the GS 7, 9, 11, 12, 13 positions. That's where most internships are. There are a lot of positions like that out there. There are mid-level career changes. So for folks who are thinking about if they're currently with the government but looking perhaps to shift to another career field, contracting is a fantastic way to do that. Senior level, we often hire senior leaders from outside the government to help us fill some of these key positions. So please think, if you see yourself in any of those levels, that we are still looking for talent from the beginning to the end. There's a summary slide that will have all of the websites and links for you, but just to give you a sense of how students and recent graduates might find their way in, there are really three ways, and this is all part of the Pathways program that the Office of Personnel Management manages. So the internship program is for students looking for experience. I can't say enough about getting some experience while you are still in school or transitioning out of school. Incredibly important. The recent graduates program is for undergrads who have completed their requirements within the last couple of years. The Presidential Management Fellows program, which is my favorite, and a lot of hiring managers really like this program because it's for people coming out of grad school or have been out for, I think, a couple of years. But we can hire them directly. We don't have to go through the posting process. It's the easiest way to get some new talent on board as a manager. And so the PMF program, I know it's very competitive, but I encourage everybody to look at what those requirements are and if you're interested to apply. Again, the link's at the bottom. I've provided that in the summary slides so that you can take a look at it at your leisure. Let's talk a little bit about some tips for getting the job. There are obviously a lot of positions out on USA Jobs. I think when I did a search a little while ago, there were a couple thousand contracting jobs at various levels, some entry, some mid, some senior. But certainly there's lots of jobs on USA Jobs generally. But make sure you look at those that do not require, if you're not part of the government now or you don't have status, make sure you look at jobs that don't require status, because those are for folks who are either in the government or who have been in the government. So just make sure when you read the announcement that you read it carefully. Look for the ladder jobs. You come at a 7-9-11. It goes up, for the most part, almost every year to a certain level. They move you up quickly, and frankly, it was one of the selling factors when I decided to take a job with the government, was that it moved up quickly and the salary went up quickly as well. Go to job fairs, talk to people, join networking organizations. There are a lot of groups around DC in particular, but certainly out in the field where young professionals and young folks who are interested in public service can get together. So absolutely networking works, so make sure you look at all the opportunities there. There are lots of free online sort of contract-centric publications or IT-centric publications. There are lots of them out there. A quick Google search will give you a sense of them. You can sign up. You'll get emails delivered to you if you're interested. You can kind of catch up on what's going on in the federal space. So I recommend that. Polish and tailor your resume. So I'm sure you've heard this repeatedly, but be really specific about your accomplishments and the results of your work. Include outcome-related numbers. So put some math on your resume. Put savings numbers, improvement figures, performance information. So tout your stats. You've done some great work. Make sure you quantify it and put that on your resume. I think it's very important that you put that up front so that the folks who are looking through your resume can quickly assess the impact that you've had. I would also take a look at the agency's mission that you are interested in and perhaps put any relevant information that you've got up front on your resume so that it just pops right there. For the interview, please do your homework. Understand the mission and the structure of the agency, and if you can, have an understanding of the budget. And I would learn about a couple of their biggest programs just so that you can ask really good relevant questions. There's a lot of public information out there. I've provided some links to the OMB site that'll talk a little bit about the budget, the size of the organization. USA.gov will give you sort of the structure and let you know kind of the mission so that you can do some more research. Always ask a question related to the mission of that organization during the interview. My understanding and my experience has been that folks are very, very engaged in the mission of their agencies, and so if you can make that connection during the interview, I think that just gives you sort of an edge up. So here are the resources. I think they will be sending this out a little bit later. USA Jobs is a central portal. All of the recent grad programs I've listed there. There are far more details and applications that you can look at there. Under acquisition, the OFPP, which is my office's homepage, all of our policies go up there. Welcome you to take a look at what we've got, what's offered there. Acquisition.gov is sort of the internal portal to the government's acquisition site, but it has links to resources and the federal acquisition regulation and all the supplements and just other interesting information on acquisition, so I encourage you to take a look there. If you're interested in what the government is buying today, FedBizOps is where we post all of our contracting opportunities. So if you are a contractor and you're interested in proposing on something, FedBizOps is where most of that information is posted, and it's also just interesting to see what agencies are buying today. On FAI.gov, that's the training institute that we talked about. There are many training resources there. Gives you a bit more sense of kind of what a career in contracting looks like and what resources we offer. And then USAspending.gov, we talked a little bit about that, sort of the detailed data about what every agency is spending, how we buy it, was it competed, who we bought it from, et cetera. And again, information about the agencies is there. USA.gov will show you sort of where those agencies fall. There are lots of them to learn about. And then the OMB site will give you more sort of an insight on the agency budget level. So those are all the resources. I think UVA will be sending that out so people, if they're interested, can dig a little bit deeper. And so now I am happy to take any questions that folks have.
Leslie, thank you so much. This has been a wonderful presentation. While the audience starts typing in some questions, I just wanted to take a moment to thank Leslie for being here with us today and to thank you all for joining us. I also wanted to mention the next webinar that we have coming up on October 9th. Jennifer Beyer is going to present Setting Yourself Apart, How to Communicate Your Personal Brand. So I have one question to start things off while they're beginning to roll in. Could you tell us a little bit about what someone's career would look like at the 5-year mark?
That's a great question. So most in the contracting field, most people will come in as a contract specialist. So you'll help the contracting officer sort of think through the strategy. You'll help develop the requirements. And so you'll work with that person, but the contracting officer would be responsible. At some point, you would probably get what's called a warrant. And so the senior procurement executive at the agency would say, okay, you seem to know how to do all of this. We will give you a warrant to a certain dollar limit. So then you become a contracting officer for perhaps a limited subset of the acquisitions that might come into your office. And then at some point, if you continue in operations, you would probably get an unlimited warrant, which means that there is no cap on the action that you can sign. That's kind of the ultimate goal for a contracting officer. But in my case, I went through operations and did that, and then I was interested in the policy piece of it. So probably at the 5-year mark, I started to think about, well, gosh, I'm interested in how these policies get implemented, how we do change management in the government. And so I think that's a pivot point at that 5-year mark. You can go into policy. And so there are lots of opportunities in the agency for procurement policy analysts. I think it's a good idea to get some contracting operations experience under your belt, and so I would encourage that. But that's kind of what it looks like at the 5 mark. Again, on those ladder programs, if you come in, for example, at a 7, you can go 7, 9, 11, 12, and in some cases up to a GS 13. In those 5 years, I know folks are moving up quickly, and we just want to make sure everybody's prepared and has good experience. But hopefully that gives you a sense of what that might look like. And during that time, we are recommending, and most agencies do this, I think, recommending that you have a rotational assignment experience. So, for example, if you were hired at, say, the Department of Transportation, you might have the chance to do a rotation at either one of the operating administrations within DOT, or you might be able to go out to another agency and get some experience at another agency and then come back to your agency. And so having sort of that experience, I think, is very important. In some cases, you might even step out of the acquisition career field and go to work at the technical office as a rotation assignment. And so that helps you sort of understand better how those requirements get developed. And so at the 5-year mark, I think that's kind of what a career might look like there.
Great. Thank you. I see a question has come in asking whether someone would need a master's degree for these kinds of opportunities.
So I think master's degrees are helpful. There is a positive education requirement to get into the contracting series, so you would have to have a degree, and in some cases, some business, 24 hours of business classes, and there are on the FAA website, we'll explain kind of what that is. It's pretty broad, so most folks can meet it. But you certainly don't need a master's degree to come into it. I do think a master's degree is helpful. So I came in with a business degree for undergrad business degree, but I found the master's in public administration very helpful to sort of understand what the public policy ramifications were of budget decisions. And so I think very helpful, but again, not required.
Thank you. Another question would be whether there's a specific major or former career that would help someone succeed in these roles.
So that's a great question. So again, we're looking for talent from all sectors, from people coming in from undergrad, graduate, switching careers, even at the senior level. And so I think we emphasize communication skills. So people who are good writers, people who have good analytical skills. There's really a lot of strategy and negotiation. So people coming in with some business experience, people who are coming in from the contractor side. We have a lot of folks who have been on the industry side who are interested in coming into the government, and they bring a wealth of experience. Even just a couple of years is very helpful in helping us understand the impact of our regulations and our acquisition process. So I think we look for a wide variety of backgrounds and experiences. I think it's very important to quantify that on your resume again and making it relevant to the agency that you're interested in working for. And so it's just a matter of messaging, I think, all of the good work experience that you've had, even at the undergraduate level, the things that you've done while you were in college, the leadership that you've shown, the impact that you've had. Putting all that together, I think, will help us sort of bring talent in from all corners.
Thank you. And one other question, too. Are there opportunities outside of the D.C. area, or are most of the opportunities located there?
So I was actually surprised when I was putting this together to learn that 80% of the opportunities really are outside of D.C. I know when we're in D.C. it doesn't feel that way, but there are. I think we've got a presence in every single state, all of the territories, 150 different countries between our embassies and our bases. There is just a tremendous opportunity. So the federal government is everywhere. I think, one of the great selling points is that you can take your retirement, you can take your benefits, you can take your experience, and you can move. It moves with you when you go to another agency or if you start a different career even within the government. Very few places will give you that opportunity, but I think the government, of course, is because it is so big, there are lots and lots of opportunities. So, yep, plenty of chances to do federal work outside the Beltway.
Thank you, Leslie. I don't actually see any more questions coming in, so I think this will be a wrap for today. Thank you so much for being here. This was a wonderful presentation. Everyone who registered will receive the recording later today, and we'll be sending handouts with all of the resources that Leslie provided. So again, thank you all for joining us today, and Leslie, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it, and I hope everyone will join us again for our next webinar on October the 9th. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you. Thanks.
And Leslie, if you can stay with us for just a moment. Thanks.
Sure.